Hello, welcome to Drive the Bid podcast on Auto Hunter, driven by ClassicCars.com. I am Diego Rosenberg, and this is here Derek Shakey.
That's right.
You thought I was going to screw up your last name this time?
I've just gotten used to it over the course of my life.
Okay, but I got it right, didn't I?
You always do.
Uh-huh. Okay, anything to start off with, or should I just move on with the PowerPoint presentation?
Let's get into it.
You don't want to tell them about your car.
Oh, yeah. So, I've made the switch to a more commute-friendly vehicle. So, not driving the Mustang Bullitt right now. Gonna sell that. I got a Hyundai Sonata. Mm-hmm. Not to name drop or anything, but it's a great commuter so far. And, you know, Phoenix friendly. It's got a very light gray interior, modern safety features, and so far, great gas mileage.
What makes a car Phoenix friendly?
Among other things, the interior color.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, the Mustang's great, but black leather in Phoenix heat is not a good thing.
Yeah, I imagine.
Yeah, and then having ventilated seats is great, too. My new car doesn't have that, but, you know, the color is definitely going to help.
So the Kia version is called what?
Golly, I don't know.
But you prefer the Hyundai version?
That's just what I gravitated toward. Yeah, and, you know, the price was decent and great warranty. And then, you know, they had this, the convenience package is a nice bridge between the SEL and the SEL Plus. So you get a lot of, you know, convenience features with that.
Now, when they write SEL Plus, does it have a plus sign or it's spelled plus?
I've seen a plus sign.
Mm. It'd be funny if it was S-E-L-L instead.
S-E-L-L?
Yeah. I don't know. Plus just seems kind of like
pretty
arbitrary.
Standard. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, trim levels and how companies do that stuff is a little bit interesting, weird. I don't know.
Yeah, subject to change, too. They seem to change quite a bit.
Yeah.
But, this is a nice in-between. I mean, you know, it's one of the lower trim levels, but, I mean, it's got everything, you know.
Well, what do the trim levels start off with?
SE.
So SE, SEL, SEL Plus.
Yeah, and then they've got a hybrid, and I don't know the trim levels for those, but then the top of the line is the Limited.
Okay. Which sounds like a Buick.
Yeah, again, that's like a just standard. Nothing groundbreaking as far as the naming there, but I mean the SEL with the convenience package, it's a nice bundle of features, I think, cuz
gotcha.
You know, it's got the panoramic sunroof and the rear seat vents and wireless charging too.
Okay, nice. Yeah. So the news.
Yes. As you can see there's a car of the same ilk as my Hyundai Sonata, Bentley. Just kidding. So with Bentley, you know, it's more than a car brand. You know, I think they would argue a lifestyle brand, because you can get Bentley cologne, Bentley clothing, Bentley car, and now you can get a Bentley residence. So they have a residence tower that's under construction in Sunny Isles Beach, Miami.
Just so you know, folks, it's taller than that.
Yeah, very much so. When it's completed in 2027, it'll be 749 feet high. It'll have 61 stories and 216 luxury homes in that.
Do you have to be a Bentley owner?
That I don't know. It would make sense given where it is. But one thing I know is you do have to be pretty well healed to be there. They've got one of the trick features is in each unit, they'll have storage for up to four cars. And then there is an internal elevator system that residents can use to bring their car up to their luxury home, and they can do it without stepping outside of the car or pushing a button or anything. So once they start living there, they can get an RFID tag installed in their car. They drive into the building, and that'll be scanned upon entry, and this lighting system will guide them to the elevator that will take them to their floor. And
so is this elevator shared with another floor, with another apartment? Because if that's the case, then you got to wait for someone to finish using the elevator.
Yeah, yeah. So they have more than one, because, you know, in the press release, they're saying, you know, the lighting system guides them to the correct elevator. So there's, you know, there's, I think the system is central, but there's different elevators within that.
But you leave your car here, right? I mean, like, do you drive into somewhere, or this is just where it stays on display on the elevator platform?
That's a good question. I didn't see anything about that in the story, but
oh, maybe it's just that's the elevator and this is just like some nice turntable.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it would make sense. Although, yeah, they say you have storage for up to four cars in the home. So maybe there's another area to take it to. But as you can see through the slides, there's an emphasis on indoor and outdoor living. So, you know, you get these great views. And then as a resident, residents are treated to a variety of amenities there. I sound like I'm advertising for this place. But so there's a gym, there's a spa, there's a pet spa, a whiskey bar, a resident-only restaurant, a wellness center, and a cinema.
I imagine if you enjoy carbon monoxide, this would be a great place to live.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. Sign me up.
Yeah, yeah. So that is on its way, and expected completion is in 2027.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So, thank you for the news on this one. Next, it will be my news. Subaru has introduced a new WRX. It's called TR, which in the past stood for Tuner Ready. I believe in 2006 they had a car that was, let's say, there was a base level and the TR was kind of below it. They just got rid of a lot of stuff. In this case, the TR has some upgrades. I mean, they got rid of the sunroof. You only can get it with a stick, the six-speed. Six-caliper rear brakes, two-caliper up front, Brembos, of course. Larger pads and rotors. I think I said no sunroof. New spring, stiffer suspension. 19-inch wheels, specific for this model. There's a EyeSight driver package, I guess, you know, for lane departure, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It hasn't been available on the sticks.
Oh, okay.
At least in the U.S.
Interesting.
Now it's going to be for this one.
Oh, all right.
So before it was kind of like, you know, back to basics. This one's kind of a deluxe. Mm-hmm. No new horsepower, no nothing. So sorry, Subaru folks. Maybe it's a disappointment. There's no pricing yet, but it's expected to be mid to high 40s, which I don't know. For that kind of money, maybe you'd rather have a STI. It's just they don't have an STI.
Yeah.
So Recaro's too.
Oh, okay. Nice. So it's like a handling and braking package.
Yeah, it seems.
Okay.
But, you know, let's say not for me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to ask, is that on your radar now?
No, I'm not. For $48,000, I'd get a V8.
Wait, you said 48?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like what's being thrown out there. That's not, it's not official yet, but that's what's being thrown out.
Oh, okay. I thought you said earlier 40. I heard 40, but.
No, mid to high 40s.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, that's getting up there.
So, in other news, Steve Mignante, no updates on his health, so he's stable or improving for one thing or another. If you folks out in TV land know Steve Mignante and know him from Barrett Jackson auctions and his videos, the best thing you can do for him is watch his videos. Even in the background, like while you're doing work, just press play and have it work in the background. And then go to the next video and do the same thing. That's what I've been doing to help Steve out.
Yeah, and I've learned that he has an entire playlist just about hubcaps.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Does it include wheel covers or just hubcaps?
That remains to be seen. I've got to do some more digging into
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I should check that out, too.
Yeah, it'd be right up your alley.
So next, our topic for this week is polarizing cars. In the end, let's say it's polarizing style versus polarizing engineering, like no Oldsmobile dealer diesels in this one. But Derek and I don't know what we have prepared for each other. So I think all my selections are going to be first and then his. But of course, this is a tag team and we're going to talk about them and how we feel. So the first one is a Supermaker Avanti.
What did I do to you, Diego?
Now, I think the Studebaker Avanti is maybe almost perfect, but there's a lot of people that don't like it. I don't know if it's because of the two headlights instead of four, but I could tell you I've seen an illustration of one with four headlights when they were developing this car, and four headlights looks really heavy.
Mm.
The front end just looks really heavy. Now, in the middle, they had a running change, maybe August 1963, while the 63s were still out, but before the 64s, they added square bezels here.
Yeah, you lost me.
You can see that?
Yeah.
Versus that?
No, I mean in terms of me liking it.
Oh, okay. So this is not an improvement for you?
No.
Okay. I think this is a cool car. I can see why people think it's polarizing, but I mean, I don't know. To me, this is the kind of car an architect would like. There's just a lot of things about it that just seem to be, I don't know. I mean, I can't explain why. I should be prepared to explain why. I don't know how. I'm not an architect, but it just seems one of those designy cars.
Yeah, yeah. And it's quirky, but kind of conservative at the same time, especially in a more, you know, low-key color. I think what might trigger people right off the bat is you have such an immediately noticeable contrast up front. So you have those big round lights, and then you have those hard lines below into the sides of them right away.
I don't know. I almost don't know what that means. But, you know, I think it's a cool car in many ways.
Yeah, same here, definitely. And I didn't realize they had the three little bumpers. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's an interesting, yeah, I mean.
Of course, the grill down here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is, I can see where you're coming from as far as an architect's car. I can also see it being, kind of a professor's car.
And in some ways, it's a practical Corvette.
Yeah, and that's the thing about these is, you know, if you see it in a conservative color, it's easy to think like, oh, this is kind of like a nerdy or a ho-hum or whatever. But, you know, they had higher performance versions of these. And that was back when I think they were setting records, like speed records mm-hmm. and things like that with Avantis.
Yeah. So the next polarizing car, the Citroen DS and ID also. The ID was just a cheaper one. I like these. I think people who don't like these tend to be like a meat and potatoes type of person. You know, they like Chevys and that's it. Or they like Mopars and that's it. Everything about this car is interesting in some way. The one spoke steering wheel.
And just look at those stalks too. I mean, the way they're embedded yeah. there.
You know, there's a lot of interesting things about these cars, and I don't know what those stalks are, some of them, but, here's the facelift, which started in 1968 with the four headlights and the inboard ones steer.
Mm-hmm.
The US spec ones didn't have the steering headlights or the shields, but, going from 55 to 68 and the car still is contemporary in some way, that's pretty impressive. Maybe the Chaperon convertible is a little less polarizing for some people.
Wow, that's a looker. I like it.
They're very pricey also.
I'm guessing expensive. I'm guessing they didn't make as many of these.
No, these are pretty rare. I mean, it's, let's say a coach builder did it.
Oh, okay.
How many they make per year? I don't know. I'm going to guess 200 or less. I have no idea.
Wow.
But these are pretty pricey.
Mm.
So yeah, I don't know why these are polarizing necessarily. It's from the atomic age and it looks like it's a rocket. So why not? But I don't know. I mean, different strokes.
Maybe it's, I mean, I don't think they're bad looking cars, but maybe, you know, somebody who's used to, as flamboyant as American cars could be back in the day, maybe they saw this and they just thought, because it looks kind of like a toy. It almost looks cartoonish. So maybe that was off-putting to some people.
Well, I'll also say, I think the earlier ones look a little bit better than the later ones.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think this one looks more awkward than this one. And why is that? I don't know. Does the front end look heavier with the four headlights? Is there something about the roof or the stance of this one? Is this a little bit high? I don't know.
Well, it's hard to tell because it's such a different angle, a shot.
Yeah, for sure.
I think I like the front end on that, but I think with the four headlights, it looks more distinctive than this. Because the red one, that almost looks like an old Alpha up front. That's what it makes me think of with the two, you know, just the two regular lights.
So anyway, my last one, it's not a car necessarily. It's a bunch of cars, but they all share one feature that I think is very polarizing and more often than not is not very successful. And that's canted headlights.
Uh-huh. Okay.
This is a Fiat 8V. This is a very rare and valuable car. Some look nicer than others. The Fiat 8V Supersonic by Ghia is absolutely gorgeous. This one, I don't know who did this one, but I've seen pictures of it. And, you know, in the end, this may not be canted headlights. Maybe these are like the headlights and these are driving lights and, you know, something you'd see in the grill in other cars.
Same idea, though. I mean, same layout.
You still have the same look and yeah. It doesn't work for this. The Lincoln we were discussing, you were discussing a 60 Lincoln. This is the 59, which I think looks better. 58 is the first year for these. I just think these cars are, I was going to say horrible. Maybe that's the wrong word. I mean, there's definitely aspects to them that are interesting. I mean, it's a unibody, as we had discussed. I just don't think, I mean, you compare this to a Cadillac or an Imperial, there's just no comparison. These are not attractive. A 59 Buick.
I like them on that.
They're okay. I think the 60 is nicer.
Well, the angle's not as steep as it seemed to be on the other ones.
It's not. I mean, it works. I would say this is not polarizing. It's just love it or not, especially compared with the 60. What about 61 and 62 Chryslers? I think it's polarizing, but it's not as unattractive as some other cars.
Mm-hmm. What's getting me is the separation. I mean, there's just such a stark delineation between the headlights and the grill. You know, the grill's just kind of floating there.
Yeah, on the other hand, you have a trapezoid and the, you know, it's got an angle and so do the headlights.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, it's not too stark a contrast in terms of the shapes. I mean, they complement each other. It's just, yeah, that separation I'm not keen on.
What about the 61 DeSoto then? Because it's the same body, I mean, this is the last year for the DeSoto. You can see there's two grills.
That's part of the problem, you know, because the headlights are already distinctive enough. Whether or not those make the car look good is something completely different. But then to add all of that grill, it's just too much.
Also, the parking lights here are just kind of like a little goofy.
I don't mind that too much. I mean, that's almost, you know, that almost seems like a jeweler's touch. You know, the way it's added in there. I like that. But yeah, the grills, maybe if the car was in a different color, it wouldn't be as noticeable. But yeah, that's kind of try hard.
So what about one of these Bentleys? I believe this is one of the custom-bodied ones.
Yeah, it's a very, I guess you could say, shallow angle. Still kind of, especially on a Bentley, it's just kind of awkward.
I don't think these are polarizing, but I think the one, the single headlight ones, before this little redesign, I think they look better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what about a Zunder? This is a car from Argentina with Porsche mechanicals.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know, I guess you have this small country without a, you know, without a major automotive industry, other than, let's say, you know, they had the Ford Falcon and, you know, they, all the dyes were shipped there and they made the Falcon and a bunch of other cars, you know, American cars and European cars. So there's not that kind of car design culture. So when some company or some guy had an idea for this, they hired someone and this is what they came up with. I have no idea, but what about a Gordon Keeble?
You know, that's not that bad.
I think this one works.
Yeah, it's where did that car come from? Was that an English car?
British. It's a yeah. It's a hybrid. It's got a Chevy small block.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it's, yeah, it's a little Italian and a little English at the same time.
What about a Triumph?
I would not call that a Triumph.
Oh, that's
at least in the figurative sense.
Okay, fair enough. I don't think this one's as polarizing to me. I'm not into them, but it's like it's not like those Mopars or the Lincoln. What about a Jensen?
Oh boy. That looks like they were grafted in. That doesn't even look like it came that way from the factory.
I'm not a Jensen person, but I'd be willing to bet an earlier incarnation may have had the same body, but just dual headlights. And then they came up with this, and it just doesn't work.
I think, you know, the lines are okay. I think if they would have just gone with covers or, you know, maybe just one light under a cover, and then get rid of that weird dip in the middle, it would go a long way with this. That's just, it almost looks like the bodywork is overgrown and just trying to swallow the headlights, at least from this like, angle.
Like it's a parasitic headlight?
Or is it a parasitic body?
What about this Ferrari 2+2? Because some of them came with the headlights like this. I guess
it's okay.
Technically, in some ways, it's not a canted headlight. Because they're straight, but the bezels are.
Yeah. I mean, they're inching toward that. It's okay, but still just not my favorite.
Overall, though, I think canted headlights are a bad idea.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's a difference between being design being distinctive and a design being attractive. Because you can do anything and make a car stand out. Now, is that in a good way? You know, depends.
Yeah. So those are my polarizing designs. What about yours?
So, back for the 2020 model year, Chevy introduced the new HD version of the Silverado. So towing, max towing was up, power was up. They had a new gas engine. They increased the output for the Duramax turbo diesel. A lot of great things. And then it was longer, wider, and taller than its predecessor. All these great things. And then part of the new truck was that a few massive grills. And let's go to that first one. Yeah. So that was, I would say, among, you know, aside from its numbers and everything, the most distinctive part of it. And I just remember people online, they were making all these memes and jokes about it, like, you know, oh, it looks like this now, but in like 2040, you know, the whole truck front end was just grill. You know, and I think they even made a joke about like comparing it to like those multi-blade razors. So it was just, you know, these truck designers, they want to make them look big and bold and tough and industrial. And as soon as this came out, I just remember it being a joke. But, you know, the flip side of that is it's an HD Chevy Silverado with the Duramax and an Allison transmission. So people are buying these nevertheless. And really, I mean, just like any design, I think part of it is you give it enough time and then people just kind of get used to it, whatever the initial reaction may be.
And sometimes the facelift improves what's wrong with it.
Yeah, yeah, that could be the case. Yeah, it just depends.
The regular trucks, I thought, you know, they started making a little bit Transformer-ish, like the Camaro.
Yeah.
And I think they found a nice sweet spot with how they look.
Yeah, and, you know, to me, this is not, it's such a stark contrast with its predecessor, because they had, you know, the boxy rectangular front end for so long, right? And that had just a nice classic, updated classic look to it. And then these came out and they look very sci-fi, you know, almost like a weapon of some sort, because all the, you know, the facets to the grill, it almost looks like a series of blades, not to tie in with the whole Razor comparison. But, you know, I drove a 1500 version of this, and even though it didn't have that classic look to it, it started growing on me and it set itself apart, because, you know, at the time, like, Ford had a more, comparatively more conventional look. And then these had that kind of sci-fi, very distinctive front end to them. So they didn't fade, you know, they were very distinctive from their competitors. But yeah, there are people out there that do not care for that look.
Another polarizing car. Tell me about this one.
Okay, so the Volvo 240, you know, this is the car I've always known as the Swedish brick, because for obvious reasons, you know, it's, well, at least in this form, you know, three box design, Swedish, conservative looks. Now, on one hand, you know, I think a lot of people just look at this and they're like, oh, it's a boring, you know, boxy car. That's it, right? But I think this is also, you know, it's not the first, and I don't think it was the last, but I think it is one of those models in Volvo's history that really developed a devoted following and contributed to their legacy of making safe, reliable, sturdy cars. You know, I had a professor in college. He had like three of these. You know, I guess he like drove one into the ground, got another one, and then another one that he had, I think he like gave to his daughter or something like that. I mean, he was all about the 240s. And they made, you know, from I think like 74 to 93, the Volvo media site said they made basically 2.8 million of them over 19 years.
My sister had one. So I have driven this car before. What I remember most about it is the climate control system sucked. Like, you know, it was difficult to figure out, but why is this polarizing?
Why is this polarizing? Yeah. Because, you know, on one hand, you have people that are very much into these. But then on the other hand, I think these lose a lot of people, because there are a lot of people that just look at them like, oh, yeah, it's a boring, boxy car.
So it's kind of like a beige sedan in a certain sense.
Yeah, yeah, I would say, yeah, whatever color it is, yeah, the emotion of beige, I think, hits a lot of people when they look at this car. Okay.
So your last one.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. So for 2011, Nissan came out with a convertible version of the Murano. They called it the Murano Cross Cabrio.
That's kind of like the answer to the question that was not asked.
You took the words right out of my mouth, because in the press release for this, they were they were trying to get all, you know, poetic with it, you know. And here's a quote: "The impetus behind innovation is often as simple as asking questions not posed before, such as, how do you overcome the functional limitations of a convertible?" So without them saying it, well, you said it perfectly. This is the answer to a question nobody asked. And remarkably, I thought, you know, this might be like the Lincoln Blackwood from the late 90s, early 2000s. They ended up making this through 2014. Now, on Nissan's media site, I didn't see a press kit for the 2013 model. So I don't know if they skipped that year, but they made this for 11, 12, at least 3 years, possibly four if there is a 13 model, but I'm guessing there isn't. But one of my colleagues who spent decades in the retail automotive industry, when he when I told him, you know, we'd be covering this in the podcast, he immediately said, oh, when those came out, they were terrible.
I don't think they skipped the years. Maybe they just skipped the press kit.
Yeah, but it's weird that, maybe it was such a carryover year that they just didn't put it up. But I can't imagine it changed that much from 11 to 12. But anyway, I mean, yeah, they made it from 2011 to 2014.
They're pretty rare. I know I've looked up the number. I don't remember what it is. Probably it's like 3,000 for over 3 years. Who knows?
Yeah, you know, oddly enough, I want to say I've seen two or maybe three of these in the Phoenix area. And here's the thing. Like, so on one hand, everybody that has talked about that I've seen talk about this car online or I've mentioned it to in person, the immediate reaction is, oh, it's ugly, it's a joke, whatever. Like, this vehicle is not taken seriously, right? But, you know, now it may just be that they wanted to get their Nissan wanted to get their money's worth out of all they invested in making this. But, you know, it wasn't immediately killed off, if I can say anything in its defense. But I feel like, in a way, there's a possibility this layout may be, the philosophy behind this may be ahead of its time. Around the same time, Range Rover had a convertible version of the Evoque, their small SUV. And, the idea of an open-top SUV is not all that radical or foreign, because you look at, granted, a very different SUV, but you look at Jeep Wrangler and the new Ford Bronco. You can take the top off, and there's even a power retractable top for the Wrangler. You can take the top off, you can lower the windshield, you can take the doors off. It is open air SUV driving, albeit in a very different format with different capabilities.
I mean, like, to me, those are like lifestyle vehicles.
Well, just like this.
I don't know if there's a lifestyle. I mean, this is like go to the dollar store vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely more of an urban sort of lifestyle vehicle, but it's a similar concept. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of shocked this idea didn't really take off.
I mean, I could see why.
Well, I mean, granted, it's a slightly goofy design, but the whole idea of it, maybe in a few years, this'll make a resurgence, or not a resurgence, because I don't think these were all that popular when they were out, but maybe this format will come out again and people will really buy into it.
Let's hope not. With that being said, it's time for our Auto Hunter Spotlights. You and I chose a few. Yours is first.
All right. So, yeah, this is one that's very close to us. This is definitely in our neck of the woods. This is a 2004 Hummer H1 with a lot of goodies on it. So, apparently for 2004, they only made 252 H1s. This is a four-door wagon. And as you can see, it's got a lot of upgrades. So you got the roof basket. You've got a variety of aftermarket lighting, xenon and or HID and LED lighting has been added to this. Then you get these fender flares. You get the tube steps. And then up front, you've got this, brush guard that covers the front end and the hood. You've got 37 inch Nitto tires. You've got a winch. You've also got some lighting in the back end. And then this has also been fitted with a rubber duck 4x4 2 inch body lift, as if these weren't capable enough already. This came from the factory with Hummer's H Adventure package. So part of that is electronically locking front and rear differentials. And then the engine on this has been upgraded. So this has got an Optimizer 6500 6.5 liter turbo diesel V8.
I thought it was my impression that engine was available. So are you saying that this engine was not originally in this vehicle when you say upgraded?
Yeah, that's what I gathered from the information supplied.
Okay. I think, don't quote me, I think this engine was a stock engine for this car or this vehicle, but there was a few features that were added to it. I don't remember what it was. I remember asking you, what is this? What is that? Some off-roading stuff. I don't really remember. Maybe one was a pump. I don't remember what it was.
Oh, yeah, for the fuel system. Yeah, they've got a heat sink, and then they've got the... they've got another I think fuel system upgrade. And speaking of the off-road parts, aside from the winch, yeah, they do have a snorkel. So if you want to take it through deep water, that is it's more capable when it comes to that. Another highlight about this is it's got third row seating in the back. You saw it earlier in one of those previous slides. And overall, for being almost 20 years old, this has only covered 39,000 miles.
Well, I mean, it stands to reason, because where can you take it?
Anywhere.
True, but I guess in most normal driving circumstances, it's kind of a tough proposition. It fits, but I mean, you're not going to go to the bank drive-thru.
Yeah, that you might need to butter the sides to do that.
Mm-hmm. No parking near the door.
Yeah, so this one is currently live on Auto Hunter, but the auction for it ends Monday, October 16th. So I wanted to give everybody out there plenty of time to get their bids in on this.
So one of mine is this 1960 Thunderbird. Out of the Squarebirds from 1958 to 60, the 60 is my favorite. I do like the triple tail lights right here. Of the 60, the 58 and 59 didn't have the triple tail lights. I do like the grill. I like that insert in the grill too. I think it adds some depth to it that doesn't exist in the 60, the 58 and 59. Although I don't think it's necessarily necessary. What stands out to me though is the color combination. I think the black with the tan. Maybe off-white. It's hard to tell with the lighting. I think it looks pretty good.
And it kind of ties in with the top, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a looker. It's got the 352, the standard motor, which is absolutely no powerhouse. You could get a 430, which would be much more interesting. But this one, the way it's trimmed, I think it's pretty cool. Unfortunately, I can't tell you when it expires, but this auctioning is ending soon.
So I guess probably
by the end of the week.
So I guess in that color combo, you know, it'd be perfect for going to your favorite bar and having a black and tan.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Just, you know, make sure you're sober when you hop in the car again.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Public service announcement for today.
Stay in school, kids.
Yes. Say no to the guy in the playground. Okay. Next, we have a 1961 Corvette.
How'd you guess?
Well, I know from the rear end that it's a 61 or 62, and I know from the badging right here that that's a 61, because 62 is the first year for the 327, and they had new medallions for it. So tell us a little bit about the 61.
Yeah, so this one, get this out of the way, this one ends on October 17th. Yeah, like you said, 61 Vet. This is a four-speed paired with a 283 four-barrel. And among other features, it's got the Hankook white walls on it, Wonder Bar radio, and a black top over a black vinyl interior.
There's the owner.
Yeah, I think this is a dealer up in somewhere in New York. But yeah, just a great color combo. I'm partial to this combination because it's red with the white coves, and then it's got the quad headlights up front. And So I was doing some research on the first generation bet. I mean, the one that started it all. And so, you know, we associate the Corvette with V8 power, we have for decades. And, you know, the earlier ones had straight six, you know, and the V8 didn't come to the Corvette until 1955. So not too long after it came out. And then there were subsequent facelifts. And then the 283 came to the lineup in 57. That was also the year that fuel injection and the four-speed were optional. And this is, you know, one thing that I love. The quad headlights came out in 58 and lasted through the 62 model year, which was the final year for the first generation.
You know, this kind of suffers from what they were saying about the Avanti when they suggested four headlights. I think two headlights make the front end look a lot lighter. The 56s and 57s.
Okay.
It looks a lot lighter.
There's, I don't know. It's interesting you mention lighter because I don't look at them in terms of that, but there's something about the single headlights. There, to me, it's too much emphasis on those points, whereas I feel like the quads, even though there's, you know, double the lighting, I feel like it kind of draws my attention to other parts of the car instead of just the headlights.
Like what other parts?
I don't know. It just, and it's weird because you would think, like, I'm already focused on the quad lights because I like them more, but I feel like in a way, I'm sure this doesn't make sense, but I feel like I'm not, I like them more, but I'm not as focused on them as I would be on the singles. You know, and I just feel like they fit better.
So what about the grill? Like the, before 61, you had the tooth, the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Do you care one way or another what the grill's like?
Nah, I mean, to me, it's always just the headlights with these. Yeah, I mean, I like this grill. I like the toothy one, too. I mean, it helps that the car just overall just has great lines. And then you put red paint on it and then the white coves. I mean, that's just goes a long way.
Very good. Very nice car. What horsepower is it?
I don't have that on here. Just a 283. It didn't say in the information, but yeah, 283 and a 4-speed.
Okay, so it's my turn for another Auto Hunter car, and this one's a 1958 MG. I know nothing about MGAs. I just know that I've never seen one with these types of, I don't know, what do you call these? I mean, it's a, is it a tonneau? Is that what it is? Because I know what a tonneau cover is, and that kind of has that fairing, but it's supposed to cover something. In this case, it's not covering; it's integrated. I don't know. Do you have any insight on what that thing's called?
What, that hump right there?
Yeah.
No.
Whatever the case, it just screams of classic 1950s race car, and I think it looks great on this car. I'm not into British sports cars of this era, maybe of any era, unless you're talking like Jaguar. This is a pretty cool car.
It is, yeah, definitely. It puts you in a certain place mentally. You know, it takes you to a certain time.
And it's unfortunate. It's got a four, like all of them did at the time. But you know, this car cuts quite a dashing figure, I must say.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, this would immediately stand out at any car show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great color combo, too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, a lot of things go with tan, but blue and tan, it's like me wearing khakis with a blue shirt. That's just like, you know, my typical uniform at work, except here.
Yeah, on podcast days, yes. We always wear the uniform.
Mm-hmm. So, with that being said, those are the cars, some of them currently on AutoHunter.com, driven by ClassicCars.com. Thank you, Derek, for your insights on polarizing cars, new car news and your Auto Hunter picks. And thank you folks for watching. Don't forget to press that like button, and we'll be back with you next week on Drive the Bid. Thank you.